Oh, hey, come on in, grab a chair. Old Kev and I are just firing up the mics now, and I expect we'll gab some. Welcome to Seaside Pod Review. As crazy as it seems, we're still going 75 episodes in. We laughed, we cried, and Kev started a podcast within a podcast. Next level. Sit back, put your feet up. We are talking Queen.
Brand new angle, highly commendable. Seaside Pod Review. Woo-hoo. Seaside Pod Review.
Podcast.
Seaside Pod Review.
Should we start podcasting now? How about we start now?
Okay.
Are we podcasting yet, Kev?
We're potting like maniacs.
We weren't potting just now.
Depends how I feel when I'm doing the edit.
Well, you know what? How about you go fuck yourselves and you just fucking start right now, okay?
I have commenced.
So here you go, Kev. I got a little bit of news for you.
Oh, good. Here you go. Randy news.
So, you know that I work freelance.
Mm-hmm.
And I was supposed to go work on a TV show, but it looks like it's going to be pushed back a month. So I'm not too happy with that, Kev. But that's the life of a freelance audio guy where I live. But you'll all be delighted to know that I still get a good couple of days of Saskatchewan Junior League hockey to deal with next week. And just in case anybody's interested, they'll probably want to know where I'm going. It's
sprawling metropolis.
Yeah. And the place is called Flin Flon. Now, if anybody just feels like it, you just go ahead and just type that into your Googler and you just see exactly where it is I'm going. And it's just exactly as remote as you would expect. And it's going to be wonderful. We're going to stay at the hotel. I do believe it's called the Prospector Inn, which we have dubbed the Bed Bug Inn, because the last time we were there, they had bed bugs and we vowed we'd never stay there again. But the fucking motherfuckers.
Fuck the motherfucker, fucking fuck the motherfucker. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucking Pope.
In Flin Flon, Kev, they've got nothing else to do but play hockey, so they're really good. So they just keep winning year after year after year. And I know some of you are saying, well, Randy, this is the Saskatchewan Junior League hockey. Why is a Manitoba team playing?
It's a good question.
It is a good, and that, you know what? And anybody who's got that question, send me an email. I'll tell you why.
I would anticipate up to no emails coming in about that question.
I think you're probably right. But you know what? Tell you what, fuck it. I'll give you the answer anyhow. The border of Saskatchewan and Manitoba, there's a town on one side and there's a town on the other side. On Saskatchewan, it's called, fucking struggling to remember the fucking name. Whatever it is on Saskatchewan, the other side is called Flin Flon, but it's the same fucking town. So,
what's his name?
Floydminster.
Yeah, okay. I didn't know that.
Except one side would be called Floydminster and the other side would be called
Flynnminister.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Is sure one's not called Flynn and one's not called Flon? Surely that would make the most sense.
Starts with a C. Well, this is going to bug me. Just hang tight, everybody. Hang tight.
So,
Kevin.
The real question is, though, Randy, is, you know, you like to give names to place names. You know, Depressed Van and all these types of places. Surely you call it Flip Flop. Or do you call it, what do you call Flin Flon? Have you got a name for Flin Flon? There must be something.
Oh, hang on. Here we go. Got it. Creighton.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Creighton, Saskatchewan. And then they're joined. Basically, they're joined. It's Flin Flon. No, I don't know what I call Flin Flon. It's fucking shithole. I don't know. It's not a great place. They had a huge mine. It's a mining town.
Yeah.
It's dying. And I, in a way, I feel sorry for the folks up there because it's like fucking, it's the very start of the Canadian Shield in Saskatchewan, which it's actually really quite beautiful. That's a rock. It's pine trees.
Yeah, we should tell people too that when Randy says the Saskatchewan Shield, this is not some sort of space defense force.
Oh, Canadian Shield.
The Canadian Shield. This is just a massive amount of rock that forms quite a lot of the north part of our country, and it's rather beautiful in a stark it's kind of way, but
it's rugged.
It's rugged. Yeah. Just rugged. Like you, Randy. Just like you. You're rugged.
Well, you know, Kev, thanks for saying that. But really, you know what I am? I'm a complaining pansy.
You're a complaining pansy. Well, fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, like, listen to me. I'm fucking bitching and whining about having to go up the fucking flintlock to work.
There's a whole truckload of people would kill for that job. That's my old prospector voice.
Oh, that was really good.
Oh, cinnamon and gravy.
A couple of very famous hockey players came from Flin Flon.
Which ones?
Bobby
Orr? No.
Hull?
Bobby Hull? No, Bobby Hull's...
Hang on a second.
No, he's American.
Bobby Clark.
Bobby Clark. Ah, okay.
Bobby Clark.
Yeah, I don't know him.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Like one of the biggest players in the 70s.
Oh, yeah. You mean when I wasn't watching hockey?
That's the only time I was watching hockey when I was a small child.
Yeah.
So, he was born in 1949. So that makes sense. Yeah, he was in the 70s. Yeah.
he was a massive,
famous hockey player.
That's weird because I do know, because I got into hockey when I moved over here, I've probably just forgotten, Randy. You know what my memory's like, mate. I've probably just forgotten Bobby Clark.
Yeah.
And God love him, because I'm sure he was a lovely fella.
There's a few bodies.
Still alive? Right?
I didn't check that. I would assume so. 49, right?
You're not keeping an eye on Bobby.
No, I don't give a fuck about hockey.
It's not hockey you can give a fuck. It's Bobby, man. You know, he's a human being. He's not just an extension of the sport. Good Lord.
Sure, I'm sure Bobby's a great guy. And hockey, the sport itself, is fine. But I just don't care about it. That's all.
Yeah. Add it to the list of things I do not give a shit about.
So you bowl. I mean, you're an athlete. An elite athlete bowling.
Well,
go on.
I mean,
how'd you do?
Sports go sports.
Well, it's funny because we were talking about that tonight. We were joking around with one of the other teams that, you know, because it's playoffs right now. This week and next week is playoffs. And that Dean was saying that we're telling people that we've been on a strict regimen of going out running half marathons. And I pointed out that, yeah, because, you know, cardio is the thing that you really need for bowling. Like, that's going to, not upper body strength, not sort of coordination and core strength. Definitely cardio.
No, yeah.
Two good games, two average games, and then one absolute pile of dog shit at the end, which usually is kind of the way my night goes. But you know what? It's fun. It's social. Gets me out of the house.
Gets you out of the house.
So, gets me out from under Karen's feet.
Do you, just in between frames and stuff, do you bring a portable recorder and, like, just do a little podcasting?
Oh, you haven't heard of PinPod?
I have not heard you have a pin pod going.
Oh yeah, we got a pin pod. No, that's thrice weekly. Drops at 2 a.m. in the morning on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's just a short little 2-hour discussion about the ins and outs of 5-pin, you know.
So just 6 hours a week.
Just 6 hours a week. I mean, I'm not trying to, I don't want to go overboard with it. The last thing you want to do is saturate the market.
No, I like that you keep it nice and tight. You know, like, it's really concise. You know, I can't even imagine how much content you'd capture to whittle it down to 6 hours.
Oh yeah, I mean we're losing at least 80% of what we record.
Yeah,
you know that, right? I mean, it's the same with us. We record for 7 hours and we get it down to an hour and a half.
Wow. Well, that's impressive. And you know what? I would just like to throw my hat in the ring for writing the music. If you need some music for the pin pod.
Oh, marvelous. Okay. Yeah, we're thinking something like a jazz, heavy metal, country, hip-hop fusion type deal. Mm-hmm. Is that something you could cobble together?
Maybe? That's actually going to work pretty great because that's actually the genre that I sort of play in now.
Oh, fantastic. It looks like
I won't need to even like modify my style. I'll just ship you off one of my favorite tracks.
1, 2, 3, 9. Diddly, ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. And strangely enough, one of my favorite songs that I wrote lately is called Bowling Is Fucking Rough, and I think it would really work good for you.
Well, let's we'll get the lawyers in touch, you know, because we want to send this through the appropriate channels. We don't want to sully a friendship with kind of the talk of the business talk. So let's do that.
Of course.
I'll get my people to talk to your people, and look out, folks. Pin Pod, Check it out on all your play. Well, I shouldn't say all your plays. It's only available via mail. So we're doing it old school, right? Where it's like a newsletter kind of thing.
And we send you a VHS or
No. Memorex C90s.
Oh, cassettes. Okay.
Yeah, cassettes. Yeah, come on, man.
I didn't know if it was taped. I thought maybe it was taped. I thought maybe you guys videoed it.
Just on the small magnetic tape, you know.
Oh, okay.
We've got a Patreon for it, and at the first tier of the Patreon, we even send you a pencil if you need to do a quick rewindy, right? So, you know, can't say fairer than that.
No. Well, I think you're really onto something there, buddy. Good luck with that.
Yeah. Well, speaking of podcasts, I do want to give a quick shout out to a pal, Chaz Charles, who is just finishing up a podcast called Regarding Roger. They are going through the redux that Roger Waters did of Dark Side of the Moon. That he did for no reason. It's absolutely pointless. I don't know why he bothered. But I'm going to be going on that podcast, I think this weekend or next, to do a wrap-up episode with them, with a couple of other guests. And it should be a lot of fun. Because I have thoughts about that album. I have thoughts about Roger Waters, but I don't think those will get into the show. But I have thoughts about the album.
Yeah, isn't Roger the guy who's like gone off the fucking deep end?
Oh, he's a...
Right-wing...
He's a loot, yeah. I mean, he's just shut up, man. Just... Sit, mate. I mean, I'm not one of those people who says that, you know, artists shouldn't be outspoken about causes, but when you're wrong, probably best to shut the fuck up.
Yeah, well, he just doesn't think he's wrong. No. He's probably hanging out with fucking Eric Clapton and what's the Irish guy?
Van Morrison, yeah.
And Van Morrison, yeah.
Much of a muchness, those three, aren't they?
You know, it pisses me off too. I just think about Van Morrison, all the beautiful songs and all the great stuff, and it's just like, oh, God. And Eric Clapton, too. I mean, I got to be honest, Steve, at some point in my life, I just thought he was, you know, the shit.
Yeah.
You just read about how much of a horrible person he was.
He really is a nasty piece of work. Like, yeah, oh, I mean, the whole racist thing on stage and shagging his best mate's girlfriend, you know, or his wife, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't know, he's just an unpleasant fella, really. I can separate the art from the artist, but, you know, Clapton, too, though. I mean, after Derek and the Dominoes and then... couple of solo albums after that, did he really do anything after that? Did anyone, you know, I was on Twitter today, like, it's quite funny that, you know, probably his best known work, he didn't even play like most of the good guitar on it. Duane Allman did most of the heavy lifting on Layla.
Right. Well, I think I used this joke for Ginger Baker too, but
yeah,
what is coffee and Eric Clapton have in common? Yeah. So, you know, but I mean, I got to admit, I always liked his solo stuff.
The good guitarist. Yeah. I mean, he's a good player. I mean, like I said, I think he fizzled out song wise. I don't think he was writing very interesting songs after a while. Right. But
yeah. 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 Well, anyhow, fuck that guy.
It'll be a crime. He ain't no friend of mine. Fuck that guy.
Fuck that guy and all of his everything in his fridge. How about that? I don't know what that means, but
yeah, that seems seems a bit odd, Kev, that you'd go there. But whatever, man.
Well, should we go to Twitter then?
You?
Should we go to Twitter because it's less?
Yeah. On that note,
as Kev tries to tank the podcast,
I'm just going to try to alienate all of our listeners. One statement:
is anyone still there? Is this on?
Is this thing on?
But last week we covered a big song from The Works. We talked all about Hammer to Fall, and then we tried to guess how the Twitter poll would come back. Do you remember? Do you remember how you voted? I bet you do. I bet you do on this one.
Do I?
Do you?
I don't. I bet you I said 80 or 85.
You said 80, yeah. You said 80-20, and I went 85 because we had that discussion about it, and I thought actually that this would come back somewhere in the middle. So how did the Twitter poll resolve this week, Mr. Woods?
You're a bad, bad man, Kevin.
Steamrolling whatever I see. Oh, despicable me.
So we have... this coming back at a champion of 86.5 and Biting the Dust at 13.5. So the prize goes to Mr. Brune. Good for you. Congrats, Kev. Congrats.
Give me the prize.
I can't win it all the time.
Yeah, I know. And you, just usually.
just Just as long as they went mostly, then I'll be happy. Because I'm kind of a bit of a dick that way. Ian Winnick says, if I were to title this episode, I would call it No Nukes is Good News. For the first time ever, I stopped the episode halfway through to give the song a careful listen. It's never been a favorite of mine, but I didn't feel right about dusting it. So I didn't, but it was close.
Well,
there you go. If I would have thought of that, you know, when I did the if I title this episode part, I'd have used that. That's good. Lisa Malloy says, big fan of Brian's bangers and his riffs. That's just like, for a second, I was like, oh, did he open up like a breakfast shop or what's going on? Bangers and mash? Definitely a champion for me, Lisa says. And why not, Lisa? Why the fuck not?
You know, if Brian did open a, if he did open a breakfast cafe, yeah, he would be remiss not calling it Bangers and Riffs. I mean, that's just.
He definitely would.
Oh, God. Okay, David A. Wilson says, okay, couple of things from the last pod. As sure as cold shit in a dead dog from Randy caused me to snort hot tea out of my nose, so thanks for that. Also, Godspeed You Black Emperor are the Canadian indie darlings. Dead Flag Blues is supreme, and I was going to listen to him, and I haven't got around to it yet. I will. Anyway, Hammer to Fall is top tier champ, he says. And I didn't even know they were Canadian. Black Pie says, a Brian Belter reasserting Queen's rock credentials after Hot Space. The way he varies the riff throughout is genius, plus the tension and release into the second solo in the major key is sublime. Some production flaws, but Fred's having a great time even during a nuclear apocalypse. There you go. And not, and that's nuclear, not nuclear, because we are not George Bush.
Kathy Klimek, not bad, a nice little ditty, but never a favorite. I like it better live. The Live Aid version was much faster. That version saved it for me. Otherwise, the hammer would fall. Very nicely done there, Kathy. And Chrissy Lake at The Waters of Love. Like last week's song, I used to think this was boring. Generic Brian rocker. And it turns out I'm not the biggest fan of that varietal of Queen. It is still boring after all these years. Just a dust. I have to be in the right mood for it. Well, there you go. Michael Keeley, it's champion, but the snare sounds like a fish being slapped off a wall. You're right, Michael. That it does.
Okay, Randy, you have the audio technology. What I want you to do is go out and buy yourself a kipper or a herring, slap it against the wall. Let's record it and see how it compares.
No need. It's already been done. That's the sound they went with.
Andy Hall Radio says, post Hot Space, it's like Brian and Roger were like, righto, Fred and John, we tried your way and you drove us off a cliff. Reckon it's time you allow us a turn behind the wheel. I prefer the single version. It's cleaner and more seamless, but this simple rocker's a champion. And we didn't listen to the single version. I still haven't listened to it, but I should go back and listen to it again because someone else had commented on it too. But Jim C. at Curtis Sparkles says, for me, it's one of the few Queen tracks from the 80s that's worth a listen. It's loud and dumb, but I sort of enjoy it. At least it's not I Want to Break Fucking Free. Having said all that, if I never heard it again, that would be fine too. So, you know, Jim, not he's back. Because last week he was a bit too pleasant.
Yeah.
Jim's back. So welcome back, Jim.
Yeah, it's not a ringing endorsement. It's sort of a muted okay.
I don't hate it.
Yeah. I don't mind the taste. Dieter at My Chameleon Days says, it's just a riff. Scratty screams his head off, and it just does nothing for me. Like Tear It Up, it's pure dust. And yeah, Bradbury, it's a narrow champion for me. The guitar riff is amazing, but the studio version's production lets it down otherwise. It's a banger live, though, and Paul Walbioff voted champion, a right good rocker. I do, from time to time, find the song a bit of a bore for some reason and skip it. Anyway, that being said, it's overall a good song, which, when the mood catches me right, I play it loud and sing along to it, rocking all the way. Thanks, Paul.
Excellent, Paul. Ben Van Santen says, hammer to dust. Its repetitive melody and cliche lyrics don't appeal. The production is too polished and overshadows the raw emotion. Freddie's vocals can't keep up with the speed of Brian's guitar. Okay, well, it's a take, well, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, hey, Ben, thanks for commenting, and I love you, but I would argue that the production is not polished. If anything, it's unpolished. But that's just
not very good. Rob Maher says, champion, it's definitely a paint-by-number stadium rock number, but well done at that. nostalgic for those of us who came to Queen via The Works. And I know a lot of people for whom The Works was their first album, especially our generation, because that's when you're really starting to, a lot of people are starting to notice it on the radio, is kind of around that time. So, Queen Rocks Australia says, it's hard to argue against those that say it's Brian by numbers and it has production issues, but Hammer to Fall is still a stonking tune and has enough good elements in the production to easily be a champ. Love the bridge, the guitar solo, and of course, Fred's vocal. And yeah, man, it's, as we've said lots of times, Freddie's vocal can save a lot of average songs. It's the same thing when we talk about on the Van Halen pod, like, you know, Eddie, sometimes a song can just be a bit, whatever. And then if Eddie Van Halen plays a solo and you're like, yeah, but that bit's great. It's the same with Fred, right? So you think, fuck me, he sung that well.
I mean, let's face it, Queen wouldn't be Queen without him. And I don't mean,
of course not,
to undersell the rest of the guys, but your lead singer carries a lot of weight. So
yeah.
Midwife Nikki says, I was at Wembley in 86. They played a pretty much greatest hit set, many numbers being so much better live. This is definitely one of them, but even on the record, it was one of my favorites. The Works being my first Queen album. This tweet is powered by my sentiment. I like that very much. That's great, because I always go on, bang on about how people are voting based on sentiment and nostalgia.
Yeah.
And Richard Hearn says, I listened to this podcast between different sessions watching Oppenheimer. So despite your criticism of his outro, at 5 minutes, I'd say Sir Brian May was fairly succinct on the nuclear question compared to Sir Chris Nolan. At 5 minutes. Champion for that. Also for the riff and Fred's vocals. Brilliant. I love it. Thanks, Richard.
I still haven't seen that movie. Have you watched Oppenheimer?
So, yes, but I did not finish it. It was when we were on vacation, and but it was, what I saw was fantastic. I fucking loved it. Yeah.
I have heard that from one of our listeners, actually, Owen Ling says he feels it's Robert Downey Jr.'s best ever performance on screen, which it's 16 hours long or something. Like, I was just like, oh man, I don't know when I'm going to have the enthusiasm to sit down for that.
It's long. Yeah. We don't talk about movies. This isn't, you know, Seaside movie review, but I saw Dune 2, and same thing. It's really good, but fuck me, it's 3 hours.
Yeah.
So at my particular vintage, about halfway through, I got to go take a leak. So I miss a few, I miss some of it. And I'll just say it. Ramblings of an old man. I like myself a good 90 minute movie. Just get in, get out.
Or like the old days, have an intermission.
Yeah.
Come on. Like in a 3 hour movie, you need an intermission.
Yeah.
Fucking 3 hours long. Jesus Christ. I'm actually reading Dune at the moment. I started because I do want to watch the movies, but I've never got around to reading the book. So I'm reading the book first and then I'll catch up with the movie. So yeah.
Nice. Good for you.
Rob Patton says, it's hard to hate on this one. Just a solid, catchy, hard rock song with some superb guitar from Mr. May. Oh, and Freddie is fantastic. Which is like saying the sun is hot, I guess, which we just commented on. And our very good pal, Ruddy Rutherford, says, The Works was my first album and was my gateway to hard rock, and then on to, by early Queen, metal. This song being integral to that journey, I loved it then, but time hasn't been kind. Considering its subject, it lacks bite. It's too generic. It squeaks by as a champion. So Ruddy was right on the fence there. He's got some splinters in his bum.
Wow.
And it's been absolutely pissing down in Aberdeen. Ruddy just had a week off and spent most of it just getting rained on. So, which, you know, that dude, that always happens. But he's back out on the beat now and he's back out listening. So,
right on, Ruddy. Pete Min 70. It's good, fun, great opening, and chock full of curly whirlies, trite and shite, but well meaning lyrics. I like that very
That's
much.
Great.
Trite and shite. I'm going to use that.
Tweet of the week. Yeah. It's tweet of the week. It's tweet of the week.
Alex Small says, Hammer to Fall has its production critics, but I've always loved it, and I won't be dissuaded. And the Headbangers mix is a rarity gem. And we all know how great it was live. Live Aid, anyone?
Yeah.
Champion. Steve Ursel, top tier Queen. I wholeheartedly love it. Give it to me one more time.
Andrew Holloway says, reluctant duster. By the time of the works, it was all getting a bit by the numbers. Brian wanting to rock out, but when up against, for example, Father to Son or White Man or Now I'm Here, it just pales in comparison. It's just too generic. And it's really hard to put it up against those songs because Queen had moved on. Like they weren't doing that anymore, you know? And I mean, whether we want them to or not. So I take the point. But Carl Anderson says, Champion, I love this riff. I'm waiting for the hammer to fall on anybody who does this. I am totally jeerious. If you recall, making that word up in the last episode.
No, I actually don't. Did I say jeerious? I was saying serious and joking. And
I believe it's a portmanteau of joking and serious, yes.
Oh, perfect.
Which has now been adopted on the internet and will, if it gets substantial and significant enough usage, we'll end up in the OED and we'll have you to blame for that.
Well, that's perfect. I'm completely jerious about the whole situation.
Leighton Brown says, I can recognize and understand all the Rock by Numbers points raised against it, but this one has always worked for me. Like a lot of tracks that suffer from poorer production choices, it kills when played live, and it really does. Like, it's one of those songs that's just going to get you out of a seat at the stadium.
Top Leighton cooks, Top Leighton swings, he's got the look, woo! Top Leighton, he's the king.
PJ says, Champion, and then he's got Seth, what's his name? Seth Myers, right?
Myers, yep.
Seth Myers, boom, easy as that.
Paul Moody, an underpowered champion, like us all in many ways. Alice's dad, Barry John Williams, and he's still got the blue tick, which is good for him. Mm. Well, this one's easy. It's a Brian Rocker on one of my favorite Queen albums, Champion. And Brian Crozier, it's a clunky, plodding duster for me. Poor production, too. Listening to it was always a slog, therefore it was always a skipper. The band rocking it out live couldn't even save it for me. Therefore, it has to get to fuck. That's pretty harsh, Brian.
Get to fuck. Yeah.
Get to fuck. Sometimes I get to fuck, but it's mostly my birthday and holidays.
No, you're using it incorrectly there.
I fucking know, Kev. I was cracking a joke, buddy.
Tom Bojay says, definitely a song I would share with a non-Queen fan, Champion. So there we go. That's one of our benchmarks that we've been sort of talking about. Mm-hmm. Prime Jive Funster, Aaron P. says, Champion, love everything about it. Though I usually listen to the 12-inch version. And he provided a link there just in case anyone wants to go and look at that. Duke Nellington, which I think is a new commenter, Randy.
Mm-hmm.
And if so, welcome, Duke. At the time, loved it. Now, boring. If I never heard it again, it's no loss. Dust. Daniel Flett says, a brilliant stadium rock song with typical Queen flourishes, which separates it from other mundane efforts from the era. Brilliant. Champion, even after the mushroom cloud has settled. I like mushrooms. Not mushroom clouds, mushrooms though.
Yeah, not the clouds so much. Blair A, 98. This should be an easy champion. Good riff, good lyrics, real instruments, but the production on the studio version seems to bring it down. Live, it's awesome. Love the slowdown opening from the Queen and Paul Rogers tour. Look at me. See how I did that?
Look at that. You got one.
For fucking any help. And the Brigadier, that's, I do believe his name's Matt, but I just thought, you know, let's just call him the Brigadier. I like that.
That's what his rank is. Call him by his rank.
I know. We've got to talk to him about his rank, you know. So a champion for me, I remember that guy in Highlander having it on his car before he took on the Coogan. So it must have some inspirational power. Don't like the single version, though. It's a horrible edit.
I do like you just pronounced it the Coogan, like it's Steve Coogan.
it's Kurgan. Kurgan,
yeah.
Kurgan.
It's way better taken. I mean, Highlander would be a very different movie
if
Alan Steve Partridge Coogan. Was a Highlander.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. My old man eyes, I missed the R there. Sorry. And I'm not like a Highlander nerd like some people.
Oh, God, cheese! This is cheese!
Now that's going to be stuck in my fucking brain for, you know. Knowing me, Alan Partridge, knowing you, Kurgan. Aha! Aaron Mullen says, a straightforward Brian May rocker and a straightforward champion to boot. Despite the weaknesses of the mix, Freddie called it right. Give it to me one more time. By the way, the Queen and Paul Rogers version is well worth a listen. Rejigged as a ballad before the return of the rock championism. So that's a couple of people have mentioned that. We'll have to give that a listen. And Dominic Pierce, to finish up Twitter, says, great song from a great, albeit short, 80s album. Champ.
Nice.
Let's boogie over to Facebook here, Randy, and we'll see what the facing books of people have said. Now, should mention too, though, quickly that the Facebook vault was, I think, maybe one of our first or very, very few 100%ers. 26 votes, all 26 in favor, zero against. So the eyes have it on Facebook. Yeah.
Wow.
Our pal Sean McGinnity from the Sean Geek and Fast Fet podcast says, I don't think I said that right, but I'm leaving it in. Although not a full-fledged Queen enthusiast, I was mildly aware of this song as I had heard it from the Live Aid performance, and I'd always thought it weird that it wasn't played on the radio more. Love the crunch guitar, love Freddie on here, and really, other than the shoddy mixing on the drums, everyone is in pure form on here. Champion for me.
I hate Winnipeg.
Yeah, and I mean, Rog plays a really fucking good part in the song too. It's just, it's the mix. It's not his playing, so.
Yeah. Richard Stott, it's a clear champion, even though for me it suffers from the same overexposure as many of the other greatest hits. In this case, made even more extreme as I've been playing it in various cover bands over the last 18 years or so. But putting aside my own boredom with it, it's hard to deny that's an absolute rock classic. Yeah. Well, there you go. And Richard, I've got many, many of those songs myself where, you know, I just know it is a great song. It's an amazing song, but I've personally played it, sang it, and or heard other bands sing it and play it. So it's, for me, it's just like, kill me now. For me, this isn't one of them. I have never played Hammer to Fall Live.
You've never really been
I've never
hard rock.
I've never played it. I've never even played it.
Dead?
Like in rehearsals. Yeah. Or dead, even.
Okay, Michelle Stagman-Curlander. This is quite a long one, so strap in here, Andy. Says, hear it so often live. This is the first time in a long while I've heard the studio track. Easy to vault. Love it. Always have. Champion. Brian's guitar and Freddie's and Roger's vocals and the drums and bass. Everything that is penultimate Queen is here. I adore it. Though at my age, I'm afraid I don't connect it with Nuclear War despite the one lyric, since the rest of it is all about what I worry about so often. Time is passing. I am disintegrating. Damn. Since I hear it so often at Live Aid in Wembley, which I'm about to listen to again because of you, I actually just now looked up and read the lyrics. I haven't done that for a long time. Build your muscles as your body decays. Let the anesthetic cover it all. Lines I hadn't really focused on before. Jeez, I just finished lifting my free weights. I turn 80 in July. Holy shit. Nice work, Michelle. Keep trucking. It says, doesn't mean I'll stop listening, though. I love the song too much. And then she says, thanks for the giggle, by the way. The Roger Eunuch talk lightened the mood as I read the lyrics. Update a day later. Just finished watching Wembley, as you suggested. Love it. And Spike and the guys with dueling guitars. But you only pointed out Deaky's weird-ass garb and not Brian in a long white wizard robe. I love, love, love the way Freddie moves as he sings, always do. And what makes Roger's memorial song so emotionally strong when he says, shake a leg and fist to the sky. I also listened to the album track again, and I'm afraid I'm not a drum expert. Couldn't tell a snare from something else. Sorry. All I know is that I love what I'm hearing, whether or not technically admirable from the standpoint of you guys. Again, champion. There you go. That's a dissertation. And whatever. In a couple of months, a very, very happy birthday. We'll try and mark that down. It's my birthday in July too, and I'm not 80.
Alan Duty looks like a lady. Definite champion. Loved it when bought the works in 84 and saw them play it live that year. However, for me, it hasn't stood the test of time and doesn't go on the same list as other classic Queen songs like Brighton Rock, Tie Your Mother Down, and Liar. And Steve says, champion, of course. Live is even better. I agree. Have you heard of the live version that starts as a slow ballad then burst into rock? Brian did it on his solo gigs in 1998. And I at first didn't even recognize it. Great surprise. Those days, there weren't set lists on the internet, of course. Later, they did the same thing with Paul Rodgers. And Steve, who sometimes goes by the name of Pepin, by the way. thanks. Thanks so much for your comment.
Well, let's, you know what? Enough people have said this, Randy. Let's just give this a quick little blast here. We'll just see what this is all about and see whether
I'm not sure why we've waited this long.
Here we go. Yeah, that's pretty cool. It's almost got a gospel-y kind of feel to it, hey? Especially with Paul Rodgers kind of bluesy voice. It's got like a little bit of a, you know, kind of quiet little bluesy gospel-y kind of thing. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, pretty much.
I dig it.
Pretty much. Old Paul, he's had a pretty solid career, hey?
Oh, fuck, man. I love Free. Another band I grew up with and absolutely loving, My Brother Jake and Heavy Load and, of course, you know, All Right Now and the big hits too. But I love Free. I'm a huge fan.
Bad Company.
Company's phenomenal. Yeah, no, Paul Rodgers is a bit of a stud.
The Firm, which I had forgotten he is part of.
Yeah. Serena Shumaker says, just perfect classic 80s Queen. Nice and succinct, and I would definitely agree. Rude Seegers says, guitar riff, best part of the song. Vocal, Freddie at his best. Album, one of Queen's best. Ending, cannot think of a better one in the catalogue, especially since they were masters in the era of fade-outs. Song, absolute champ. Top 10 for me. So, yeah, there you go. I would have said probably when I was a teenager, I would have probably put it in my top 10 as well.
Yeah, Rude digs it, man. Russell Watkins, champion, great 80s Queen track. Freddie gives 110% in his vocals. Brian delivers a killer guitar solo. To my ears, the mix sounds a little muddy, and I do prefer the tempo a bit faster as in the live performance. Still rocks, though. Yeah, it's true. Nick Crofts, great track. Perfect stadium live rocker. Brian capitalizing on a winning formula for a live rocker staple on every Queen, Brian May solo, Queen tour since. The 12-inch headbanger mix, it's good too. Suzanne Morris, don't have to think about this one. Absolutely a champion from start to finish. Hashtag Queen Monster Track.
Better than Queen Monster Truck. There's no room in this world for truck monster trucks and truck airs, Randy. There's no room for them. Also, I think I'm going to maybe start a thread on this about on social media somewhere that I think we need to stop abbreviating Brian's name, you know. Because BM is also medical parlance for bowel movement. And it's not very respectful to old Bri, is it, that we're going to start calling him a poop. Michael J. Smith says, no lacrosse talk. Well, after getting over this major disappointment, I decided to push on through the episode. I've chosen Champion for Hammer to Fall. It's a rather straightforward rocker, so it doesn't reach the earlier heights of Queen, but it's a great track to sing along to, especially in the car. Yeah, I love singing along to this one too. Sarah Chapman, 100% donut spinner. Sarah's donut is spun, Randy.
Mark Spang Hansen, a great rocker by Brian with some of his best guitar works. Great vocals by Freddie. And without this song, we wouldn't have one of the best moments from Live Aid. Freddie dancing with the cameraman.
Yeah.
So it has to be a champion. Thanks, Mark.
I always think that whenever we read Mark Spang Hansen, I always think that it definitely sounds like a science fiction author from sort of the mid to late 70s. I could just see his name on the front of a book with, like, you know, some sort of moon-based kind of, you know.
How do you know that Mark does not write?
Well, hey, there you go. I don't know.
Yeah.
Mark, if you have an extensive catalog, bibliography of works, please do hip us onto those and we'll be sure to check them out. I am reading Dune at the moment, so I'm in the mood for a bit of sci-fi.
Well, there you go.
Right, well, there's our socials, Randy. Thank you to everyone who's sent us little notes. Don't forget to come check out our Discord. We have a little Discord community that we think is rather a lot of fun. And there's some extra stuff in there that from the episodes that we record. If you want to listen to more of this nonsense that me and Randy put out into the world, no particular good reason. Speaking of putting things out into the world, Randy, in terms of energy, if you're putting some energy out into the world and you want to manifest a song for us and the rest of the fine Queen fans to listen to tonight, what song do you want to listen to, Randy?
Well, Kev, I'm going to tell you a little secret. I just look at the wheel and I look at the list on the right-hand side, which I'm not sure anybody else can see. And I usually just pick one because that's just kind of the way I roll. But I'll tell you this here. I do see Bicycle Race.
Ooh.
And, you know, I guess I'll just say it. I like that tune. I'd like to hear that one.
Janu's not a fan of Bicycle Race.
Well, there's probably a lot of people who aren't.
My wife is one of them. She thinks her actual the word she uses, it's fucking stupid. Which, you know, I mean, okay. I mean, lyrically, it's not, you know, whatever. But so Bicycle Race for Randy. That's fine. Yeah. I'm going to join. I think there was a bit of a discussion about a song in the Discord. So I'm going to manifest the Hitman from innuendo. So you're going 70s, I'm going to go 90s.
Brilliant.
And then in our Discord, the manifestations from our lovely Discordants are Chrissy wants to hear Pain Is So Close to Pleasure. Sarah Chapman, Rocket, a Prime Jive, which I would not be opposed to. Steve Ursel, Seaside Rendezvous. Ian Winnick, Death on Two Legs. Again, a song that I'm looking forward to covering with you. Paz, Lily of the Valley. Mark Spank Hansen, the aforementioned famous science fiction author, in Only 7 Days. Barry John Williams, The Hero. Michael J. Smith, It's Late. Black Pie wants Flick of the Wrist. Nikki, Seven Seas of Rye. Aaron Mullen, Tear It Up. And Ruddy Rutherford, Dead on Time. We've got a lot of rock. There's a lot of rock and roll in this list, Randy. So we're probably getting a ballad.
Yeah, we're probably going to get some.
We'll probably get Bijou or something very, very quiet and low-key. Well, let's see what this wheel does in fact give us. Are we going to get the big one? Oh! The wheel went, I would say, maybe 2 pixels past Bohemian Rhapsody.
I would say.
But we're going back to an album that we've not covered with too many songs from. What are we covering today, Randy?
So, Kev, we have a song from Queen 2. That's the second album for people that can't count. Someday, one day.
Off the top of your head, I'm going to make a guess, an assumption here, that you probably don't know this song.
I would all but guarantee it.
So for those people who are listening, you know, for the first time possibly, or just forgotten because we don't bang on about it, we're going to go away, do some things, going to do some reading. Then we'll come back, we're going to listen to it and stop the song and talk about what we hear. Then we're going to go through and listen to it all the way through again so that Randy can get a full appreciation. So worry not if you think that Randy listens to this song for the first time, he's having that experience tarnished by my continued interruptions. We do get a complete listen through at the other end. So what say you, Randy? What are we going to do now?
Go do our fucking research, buddy. You get on that fucking Googler and you fucking research this shit up.
Stat!
Regarding Roger, an oral exploration of Dark Side of the Moon, then and Redux, with Chaz and Wolfie. Why Roger? Why? Why Roger? Why?
All right, Kev, so Someday, One Day, this is a Brian May joint at 4 minutes, 22 seconds. We have all our normal guys doing this, except we've got Fred just on backing vocals. He's been sidelined by Brian's neediness to sing lead and try and take over the goddamn band. I have no idea if that's true. I just batted it all in there. Recorded in 1973 at Trident Studios in London. Produced by Queen and Roy Thomas Baker and sound engineered by our good pal, Mike Stone. And so let's do a little bit of reading here on Queen, all the songs. It sounds like this is when Brian got his first Martin D 18, which is a gorgeous guitar. And I was just telling Kevin about how I myself have a D 28, which is just means it has a fancier binding around the outside, if I recall. And it's one of those, it's one of those life changing guitars. It's one of those guitars that when you play it, it just makes you sort of inspires you.
Yeah,
it's you know, at that point, if you have a D18 in your hands, if it can't sound good, it's you, not the guitar. Anyhow, but I know for sure I have not heard the song, so I'm really quite looking forward to hearing it. Although it looks like it may have been compared in some regard to 39, which I believe I have a dubious history with that. So.
No, it's me that has the dubious history with you. It, but I mean, yeah, I wouldn't put any.
I forget what I said about 39.
You championed it. You were safe. It was me that got the shit kicking on that one, and fairly rightly so. But I was just going to quickly say, though, that you really did gloss over the fact that your Martin D28 that you have is, you know, it's got a little bit of history behind that instrument, and you should give people a little bit of background on where you got that guitar from, because it's not just any old Martin D28.
Yeah, okay. So it's I would say it's maybe a slightly famous D28. In Canada, there was a show called Due South, and it was released in the 90s, late 90s, roughly. And there's a writer strike in the United States. And so all shows stop production, as this has happened before. And then so they, what they do, the networks would start picking up other shows they could find. And one of them was Due South, which was filmed in Toronto. And so it went on to be a pretty big show. So this acoustic guitar was bought by my good friend, Jay Simcoe, who I work with a fair bit. I bought it off of him, and he's the bass player and of some note, some major singer-songwriter in Canada, major, or, you know what I'm trying to say. I think he's, I think he's an excellent songwriter. So I bought it off of him. So it, yeah, it's a bit of a special Martin D28. It was played on five seasons of a major network television show. So yeah, pretty cool. I was pretty proud to have it, and I have used it on a kajillion recordings since then.
As you said to me, you know, if you can't make a Martin sound good, then it's definitely you, not the guitar. So
it's you. Yeah, it's your problem at that point.
You know, it is one of those things, though, and I'm not a guitarist, obviously, but I know enough of the language, and I know that, but every single guitarist I've ever spoken to only ever speaks with reverence about Martin guitars. Like, anyone who plays a Martin doesn't want to play anything else. You know, everyone says that once you've got a Martin, you no other acoustic guitar is really going to cut it, because they're just better than everything else, right?
Well, yeah, like, so once you have a Martin D28 or D18 or whatever, like, you just don't need another acoustic. Right. There's just simply no need for it. You've got the
cream of the crop. Yeah,
and you know, it's you know, when something becomes an industry standard, it can often be like, you know, everybody's trying. That's what everybody's trying to achieve, and so you know, there are some close ones. Taylor makes some fantastic guitars.
Yeah.
Acoustic. Those would be, Taylor probably be for me the closest that I can sort of think of, although there are definitely others. But yeah there you go. Acoustic guitar talk done.
Acoustic. Oh, fuck. Now we're going to need a jingle for that one. It's too many syllables. It doesn't work. okay. Well, you know what? I was looking at, Randy, with this one, is that it was never played live, which does surprise me a little bit, because, you know, especially because when you think about on a second album, you don't have a huge back catalog of material. So bands quite often would play both their first and second albums live most of the time, because that's all their material, right? So it's kind
everything
of
they got. Yeah.
A little bit unusual. I'm going to have to dig in a little bit. And if anyone knows, if anyone's ever heard Brian or Freddie or John or Rog talking about why this wasn't played live, I'd love to hear it, because I do find it a little bit odd, because I think it would fit quite well. And this is the penultimate track on side white of Queen 2. So I think we've discussed them in a couple of times. Like, it's broken up instead of side A and side B, the affectation that it's side white and side black. Side black is entirely composed by Freddie, which is side two, and side one, side white, it's almost entirely composed by Brian. As sort of a single piece, or certainly thematically consistent. And then you get the loser in the end at the end, which is Roger's contribution. But so this is kind of like the last song in Brian's suite on Queen 2.
Wonderbar.
Yeah. Don't listen to this song, Randy, that you've never heard before?
Nah, fuck it. I'm going
to. Oh, well, should we just go straight to vote then?
I'm just going to head in. Bye.
It's almost got like a 60s-y type of vibe to it. Eh? That's a little, you know, which camera song it was we covered, and it said in the notes it was talking about it being a bit psychedelic, and it just isn't. This one's got a bit more of that to it. This one feels a bit more like, you know, some of those older psychedelic bands, because it's got that little bit of a swirl in it, and some, I don't know if that's a phaser or something that's giving you that effect, but
yeah, it's the phaser. That's a phaser. Yeah, definitely. And you know, it's, I was just going to see if I could pull up a chord chart, but it almost sounds like that Martin might be capo.
Okay.
But I can't say that for sure.
It sounds a bit brighter, you mean? Is that like, is the chords?
Yeah, it just sounds like there's a capo, so that, you know, the strings sound tighter, right?
Yeah, capo 7th fret. Holy shit.
Capo 7?
That's what it says, yeah. Standard tune in capo 7.
There you go.
Cool. Look at that, folks. If ever any confirmation were needed that Randy knows what he's fucking talking about, 30 seconds in, he knows already.
Yeah, well, I can see it now here. I've got the chord chart in front of me. So, yeah, yeah. Capo 7. But beyond that, the chords look just, yeah, kind of, you know,
yeah,
just bog standard.
Mm-hmm. Two things on this that I don't know if I'd ever noticed before. There's no rhyme scheme in this, so none of the lines rhyme, which is kind of cool. Like, I like that when writers can do that. And the other thing I was going to comment on, Randy, with this one is that I think, and I don't think this is an uncommon opinion among the Queen fandom, is that Freddie's voice definitely changed and developed over the years, and his voice on Queen 1 and Queen 2 wasn't sort of peak Freddie vocally, even though it's still Freddie, it's still great. I think Brian comes out the gate just sounding like Brian May. And I think if he'd written and sung this in 85, I think it would have sounded exactly like this. Because mm-hmm. Brian May just sounds like Brian May right out the gate.
Yeah, probably because of his sort of limited kind of ability. But yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I was just noticing there, I was listening, you've stopped it right away, but
yeah, yeah.
Were there any drums happening? Are there drums in this song? I'm assuming.
Oh yeah, there's some toms in there that you maybe just didn't notice yet.
kind of buried. But anyhow, yeah, moving on.
Funny how the pages turn and hold us in between. A misty castle waits for you and you shall be.
Yeah, so I mean the drums are again. I like this drum part. You're right. I mean the drums mix isn't, you know, it's not the best. They're not super distinct, but I love what Roger's playing because it's completely syncopated. He's not just sitting on the one. He's not just keeping any sort of straight backbeat going. It's this lovely sort of, you know, very very, erratic. Possibly is the word. Obviously, it's all in time and it's very deliberate, but it's got that erratic feel to it that I really like.
Well, he's not playing the kit like you would expect, like
no.
Chuck or whatever, right? He's
yeah.
He's playing it. He's playing a bit more like dare I say, an instrument. So
yeah,
but it is an interesting part, and the mix is a bit funny, and that phaser on the acoustic guitar seems a titch unnecessary,
a bit overdone. But for you, yeah.
Well, it's just like I don't know why. Anyhow,
right.
Moving on.
So very, again, you know, pretty early on in Queen's life, Brian's already, you know, I'm going to do two different guitar solos here or three different guitar parts, or I'm going to start building these things up to be this very orchestral approach to layering up guitars that wasn't super common back then, right? I mean, there's not a ton of bands doing that kind of thing back then, and he really did sort of pioneer its use in, it's not even really, well, this isn't a prog song. This album's got those prog elements, but it's not Free and Yes. I'm sorry, Free. It's not Yes, and it's not Genesis, and it's not any of those bands. So I don't know. It's quite, again, it just gives it that distinctive Queen sound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Roger that.
Roger that. Pun intended. Pun intended there, Mr. Woods. I see what you did, right. You cheeky little boy.
That's right. I'm pointing at you, motherfucker.
Paying attention to, like, I was listening to John's bass on this again. Just sounds, fuck me, he's so good. Like, it's so easy to forget how good John Deacon is. And every song I seem to thinking, wow, that's a cool bass part. You know, until you get into the 80s when he sort of tends to sit on the roots a little bit more, but this is so cool.
Was you?
So we haven't talked a little, really about the lyrics. Again, it's sort of a, to me, it's always a very abstract. It's moody, right? It's not really narrative. It's not really prescriptive anyway. It's just setting a mood. You got a big grin on your face. What are you laughing at?
I forget who said it, but trite and shite.
Not a fan?
No. They're not. They're not horrible lyrics, but I just really think that's trite and shite's fucking.
I think
awesome.
Trite and shite is going to come out quite often on the podcast from now on.
I think so. Like I said, I think when we went by, I said I'm going to fucking use that. Listen, Kate. So I was reading the lyrics as they went by, and I wasn't devastated by his lyrical prowess. Mm-hmm. But I also didn't recoil in cringetopia, just struggling to listen to the next line either. So
yeah,
so that's saying something because I hope I say this lots, but writing lyrics is very challenging.
Yeah,
and writing lyrics that everybody can listen to and get something out of and relate to is challenging without being too cliche.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there you go.
I'd say on the way he's written it and the way the meter of the lyrics and the way he delivers it really does fit the song.
Yes.
Like and he breaks it up. It's not just bam, 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 bam all the way through. He's putting in some variation in delivery. So I think, and again, it's not a dull lyric to me. It's not certainly a dull vocal performance, even though he's staying in a pretty low register and he's not moving around too much off those, off the melody line, right?
Yeah, righto.
Yeah. I mean, this really could stand a remix, because it would sure be nice to hear what Deaky's playing a lot more cleanly there, because it's really fucking good.
Yeah, it's the mix is muddy. It's like there's no. Yeah, and especially the mids feel muddy, like the top end is. Well, yeah, okay. So when you're mixing music, the top end always just takes care of itself. It's it's the pokey bit. That's the everybody can hear.
The pokey bit.
Well, not to put too technical a term on it, Kev, the pokey bit, it just pokes you right in the ears. But getting the mid-range right and getting the bass right, and especially the bass, actually, but
yeah,
the mid-range sounds kind of, that's the thing, too. I mean, this is recorded on tape. Like, sometimes, well, this is Queen 2, so this is not like this is the first album, but I was actually just going to say sometimes they would, they would reuse tape and it would, you can only record on the tape so much, but unless they did like so many overdubs, it started to degrade. But And I'm not saying that that's the case here, but it does. It does sound.
Yeah, I got you. I agree.
Wow, that's a long, slow fade, Kev.
Yeah, it is a very long fade. And, you know, Brian, it just turns out it turns into a guitar solo jam fest at the end, and nothing wrong with that. I don't always hate that. And what I do find kind of cool is that, you know, we said that Brian lays his guitars up, but more often he's really kind of building complementary parts, where this one, really, he's playing at least two and maybe three different solos that are just distinct from each other. So I think that's a different approach to what he usually uses, where he's usually a bit more meticulous about making sure everything really aligns, and he's using the, you know, he's using harmony parts, thirds and fifths and everything else. Where here it's really just two or three different guitars just jamming out, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, first time you've heard it, do you wanna, should we plink this one through and let you listen to it properly and make some notes?
Yes, please.
Well, there we go, Randy.
Yeah, well, fucking hell, Kev.
That's someday, one day.
Yeah, well, you know what, Kev?
Mm.
Someday, one day, you have to vote first.
I know.
Sure of it. Because that was me last week. So I don't think we should linger.
Okay.
I really, really don't. And I want to know what you think. This one bite the dust? Or is this one champion?
Don't think this is going to surprise you.
We are the champions, my friend.
And I don't think you're going to surprise me, but I'm going to ask you anyway. For you, is this one of the champions, or does this one bite the dust?
Fucking hell.
Ah!
And another one gone, and another one gone, another one bite the dust, yeah!
Did I surprise you?
I thought you might dust it.
Oh, really? I was pretty sure you would.
Yeah.
It's one of the few on Queen 2, as we were sort of, you know, staring up at all these songs that we hadn't covered yet, that I was pretty sure you didn't know. I was pretty sure that you were going to dust this one, and I can give my reasons why. You know, I thought that the comments that, like I said, I've started playing my little Randy Will Say game. I think that repetitive is a word that might come up, and I think that too long is a word that might come up, or a couple of words that might come up, and mix is another word that might come up. But I'll throw it over to you to see if any of those things are in your comments and what your overall thoughts are.
Yeah, well, so first of all, here's something which I know that you won't know or care about or maybe even understand, but it reminds me, and just in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Of No Sugar Tonight and the new Mother Nature taking over section, Sean McGinnity will know that's
okay.
What I'm talking about. That's the Guess Who, Kev, who you despise.
So, oh, yeah.
It's really got a lot of that. It really sounds like an old 60s song. And so, to me, so I guess I would just like to put this out here right away before I start talking any further. I mean, it's just, I would say I dusted this by just the narrowest of margins, because it's really pretty good. I really kind of basically sort of like it, but it just can't be in the top 50% of Queen, because there's so much better and there's so many songs. So yeah. So yeah, the mix is rough. The mix is, you can't hear what Deaky's doing. The drums are really dull and really, I know it was 1973 for
73 was recorded, or 73, 74.
I mean, I know that was a long fucking time ago, but Yeah, like the drums are, it's pretty muddy. The mix isn't great. You know, I don't hate Brian's vocal.
Yeah.
But they've got this two other like singers in the band. They could just fucking sing fucking circles around him. So I don't know why he feels like he's got a, I guess I do get it, but, okay. So then beyond that, then the noodly guitar solo-y stuff at the end, it's just, I mean, I guess it was cool at the time. Now it's just, I don't know. It just sounds unfocused and
yeah.
And actually, as you pointed out, and sorry, I don't mean to steal your thunder here. Like Deaky's doing like some really super cool things here that we're struggling to fucking hear. Cause it's all this hoodla hoodla. And it just, you know, and also, it's just, you know, just as far as an actual song itself, it's not the worst, but it's just not great. Like I'm not, I, you know, okay. First of all, right now, I just heard it twice back to back. I can't really sing you how the chorus goes. I mean, does that a mark of a good song? Well, I mean, I don't know, but I mean, I think hopefully you would want your audience to be able to kind of maybe like hum back the chorus, you know, pretty quickly. And now I know if you were born and raised on this and you heard it 7,000 times, you'd go, well, Randy, of course the chorus is blah, 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 blah. But this is literally, I've heard it twice now. So,
absolutely.
I guess I'll just leave it at that. Kev?
Okay. So I completely understand and basically agree with everything you've just said. The problem with this song, and the issue with most of Queen 2 is it's part of Queen 2. And I can't separate. I just simply, my brain won't let me separate the fact that this bridges White Queen into Loser in the End. So for me, I've listened to this album so many times, and this side one of this album so many times that it is part of that bigger soundscape and that bigger piece to me. You know, so is it technically well executed? Not well. I mean, the parts that they're playing are fantastic.
Yeah.
Everyone's on form. Like I said, I love what Roger's doing because I think it gives the song a very different, very unique feel by being very syncopated.
It is cool. Roger's part is cool. If you can hear it.
Yeah, the mix is bad. Like it's not a great mix. It just isn't, right? And it also, I think, that feeds into that is that with Brian's vocal being low too, that further muddies that sort of, you know, mid to low end as well, that everything else. So you've got a lot of stuff that's competing for kind of the same space. The solo at solos at the end, yeah, they are in focus, and I think you could have done something differently there. So I think you could have trimmed this song down,
yes,
and clip it in around 3 minutes. Then I think it actually probably would improve it. But again, all that said, I can see all the downfalls. But there's something about this song that's always really struck with me. It's kind of like, I like that phase on the guitar. I know that you said that you weren't a huge fan of the phase on it, but something about that just made, you know, when I first listened to these songs when I was a kid, it doesn't sound like anything else that I was listening to around that time. You know, the Kinks weren't doing this and the Who weren't really, not on acoustics on, and they weren't really doing this kind of thing. So it gave me something that scratched a little bit of an itch. Right. And that stuck with me. Again, there's a lot of nostalgia in this song when I'm looking at it. And I love that the end line. So someday, one day, you know, but someday, one day is the end of the chorus. And that line just sits there the first two times. Then it resolves on the last one. Is, but someday, one day, we'll come home. And I love that you get that resolution at the end. And like I said, that line segues into or transitions into Loser in the End and the subject of that song really, really well. So to me, it's, you've heard this a lot on social media and on Discord about some of these songs that we are looking at in isolation when they're part of an album and part of a bigger suite, they play differently when they're part of the album, right? And so this is one of the songs that I'm really struggling to separate that out. So I had to go champion. And is it a champion by a lot? For me, it's not a 9% resounding. It's not on my playlist. I probably wouldn't give it to someone to say, listen to Queen, this is a great song as an example of what they do. But I couldn't dust it, mate. I just can't dust this song because it's on Queen 2. Like I don't know what to do. So I'm conflicted with it.
I mean, so, and this is the complaint that we've heard from some listeners, is that the format, our format, in a way I blame Corey Morissette, actually. Corey. Kev's coming for you, buddy. Watch him.
On Thursday.
He wants your job. Anyhow, this format's rigid. Yeah. And there's So for me, I don't know Queen 2. I've never listened to it in its entirety. I don't know. Like, I don't know that this song runs into that song and that song runs into this white side and there's a black side. I don't know any of that shit. So for me, I just got to go by the standalone song. And as it stands alone, it's a duster.
Yeah.
And I'm becoming a little more resolved now as I'm talking about it. But still, like, I mean, listen, I just, there's nice points about it. Of course, it's, you know, it's four super talented fucking dudes. In that regard, it's great, but in a more accurate way.
Oh, here we go. Well, yeah, let me ask you this though, because I think that, you know, again, we've talked about this, and at some point we will do a Queen 2 listen through. And what I'd love to do once we're through Queen 2 and we're through the catalog is do a couple of special episodes literally on side A of Queen 2 and side B of Queen 2 as a piece. Because I think, again, once you go back, it's one of those things that if you listen to Queen 2 and you know, like we've talked about lots, you don't listen to a ton of prog, but it's not like you don't like prog rock. And I think that when you listen to side A of Queen 2, this song will just be, even if you don't think, oh, that's my favorite part of this side of the album, it'll be one of those where you'd say, yeah, that fits there. It should be there. I like it there. It works. I'm sure that's where you'll sort of end up. I'd be very surprised if you didn't, you know? And like you said, I mean, if we had a third option, this could well be a third option for me. Like I said, it's not a strong, like, oh my God, Someday One Day is one of the best things they ever did. It's probably one of two tracks on Queen 2 that are, if you're going to call tracks on Queen 2 weaker, it's one of the weaker tracks, but it's part of Queen 2. I don't know what to say.
Well, I mean, you know, and the same for me too. It's not like, this isn't like 10%.
Yeah.
Queen.
We've had a lot worse.
You know what I mean? And you know, I don't know how much below 50 it is, but it's just slightly below 50.
Yeah.
But, and like I said, of the, how many songs we start with?
160 some, yeah.
70,
yeah.
Or whatever the fuck it is. I mean, they just can't, like 90% of it can't be above fucking 50%. It just fucking can't be.
Yeah, that doesn't work statistically.
Yeah, it just doesn't work. So, you know, if anything, for almost that reason alone, this one's got to fucking go below, man.
Yeah.
It's got to take a fucking nosedive. I'm sorry, buddy.
I mean, I think if you're, you know, again, like coming into this one, I was pretty confident that that's the way it was going to go. And I was kind of ready for you to say pretty much what you've said, that you don't hate this song. You just don't think it's, and it is, look, it isn't as fucking strong as Fairyfellow's Masterstroke, as strong as March of the Black Queen, as strong as Ogre Battle, as strong as, like, pick any song really off this album and it's not as strong as it. So I totally get that, right? So
yeah,
I think we're, you know, above 10 to 15% above on my side and maybe 5 or 10% below for you. So I think that's fine.
Basically, we just agree that we're both sort of right.
Yeah, absolutely.
In a weird sort of agreeing way. And you know what? You know what, Kev?
What?
It's just a relationship that you and I have, you know.
Isn't it grand? Isn't it beautiful?
Yeah, it's nice. We can disagree and then just still be really happy to hang out and talk about it.
Well, you know, it's not just us talking about these songs though, Randy. We do put this out to our wonderful listeners to find out what their thoughts are.
We sure do.
And then we have this, our little ongoing battle, which I've got to sit down at some point too and figure out who's winning. It doesn't really matter, but, well, yeah. Sports go sports. You know, there's got to be a winner and a loser. But how do you think this is going to pan out on Twitter? Like I said, I've given you, I think, you know, the information, obviously, with it being on Queen 2, I don't know how many people are going to dust it, but I think there are going to be people who agree with you too, that it's sort of, you know, on the basis that you can't champion everything, maybe it will come back a bit dusty. So what do you think?
It's you to go first, buddy.
Might have got me to go first, isn't it? So yeah. I'm going to, this is a really fucking tricky one, I think. And I'm glad we don't play Price is Right rules, Mr. Morissette's bloody ridiculous constraint that he puts on all his voting shenanigans. I think I'll go 65-35. Because I think there will be people who maybe aren't like huge Queen 70s fans. who just think that that sort of it doesn't get very much of anywhere, that might just throw them. So I'll be conservative and I'll say 65-35.
Oh, so you're thinking that's conservative and that your suspicion is that it might be more like 70-30 or 75?
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know on this one. It's one of the ones that I'm not sure on.
Well, because just initially, what's your actual response? 60, you said?
65, 35, I've gone, yeah.
65, okay. Yeah, because I was right away, I was thinking, well, fuck, then I'll come in at like 60. But the thing is that most Queenies, this is the album that they go home and stroke their Barry Beller master stroke to, right? Okay, so... All right. Well, then, fucking hell. You said 65, hey?
Mm-hmm.
That's a fucker. That's a fucker of a position, because I'd like to be that position.
Yeah.
I will say, then I'll do this, Kev. Here's what I'm going to do.
Okay.
64.
Ooh, he's going just under. He's playing some...
I'm going to play some dirty pool here. I just hope that people are like, oh, you know what? That woodsy cunt. He's got some good points. I'm going with him.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine if it does come back 64-36? Can you imagine how fucking funny that would be? Oh, good lord! Don't let us down, people of the internet. We need to make this happen now. Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's part of Queen 2. It's just such a definitive. Like, I mean, man, Procession, Father to Son, White Queen, Someday, One Day. As four songs that fit together.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, I couldn't take any of those out. I mean, I might fuck around a little bit and play around a little bit with an edit, but I just wanted to throw up quickly, Randy. I did try and isolate the different parts. So I was gonna just flick through a little bit and see if we can see some of that lovely stuff that John was playing at the end, and we'll just see if it isolated it out. So I'll just throw it up into fader here. And we'll isolate the bass. So it's kind of fragmented, as I suspected. And that is, like we said, that's, you know, an artifact of, well, the bass frequencies aren't very distinct. So it's clipping out parts of those frequencies and chucking them into where it thinks that what it thinks is the drums and everything else. Mm-hmm. If I isolate sort of the drums in that section, we're probably going to get, you know.
Can you play the drums and bass together?
Hang on.
That's a better indication.
Yeah, that sounds great. Man, you listen to that.
If that was, you know, maybe if that was more prominent, hey, yeah. and that, because that's a really nice groove they've got going.
Yeah.
But it's kind of lost in that mix. And then, you know, hey, you know, love Bri, love you, buddy, but he's...
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck's going on here? We got this super cool lion down there that we're not even hearing.
Just so. Buried, yeah. It's a shame, isn't it? And I mean, I can't separate out. What would be kind of interesting to try to do is to take out and just leave in one of those solo parts that he's playing.
Yeah.
Just to give them, and I fader won't separate everything out that far, but what I might try doing is I'm gonna see if I can do a Randy edit. Of this one, Randy, to see if I can make you like it a little bit more, just to see, you know, I'll try and clean it up a wee bit if I can. Change some of the frequencies on that on drum and bass, lift them up a little bit so we can hear them a little bit better and shorten it up a bit for you. Maybe I'll do that for you and I'll send that to you and see what you think. Give me something to do.
Knock yourself out there, Turbo.
Okay, well, fucking Turbo. I don't know where this Turbo comes from, ladies and gentlemen. Randy's been calling me Turbo for a lot of years and I've never questioned it. But I just don't know what it means.
you don't know what that means, hey?
Nope, no idea. Turbo.
Well, you know what the word turbo means.
Well, fast.
Yeah.
Speedy.
There you go.
Oh, so you're actually calling me slow. Oh, I get it. It's one of those, it's like calling a 6-foot five guy titchy, right? Like it's one of those.
is that what it is? Okay, sure.
Oh God. Like calling someone who's only 5'3" Big Al.
Yeah. Or the fattest guy is always called skinny or something.
The thing I'll do maybe is I'll whack up on our YouTube somewhere. I'll put these isolated tracks so people can have a listen to them if they want to, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
Kind of a fun thing to do.
Hell of an idea, Mr. Brown.
Oh, mate, I got just ideas. They drip out of me like, you know.
Yeah.
Like tiramisu from the ear hole. Let's say that.
Like pus from a festering wound.
Oh, well, I wasn't going there. That's the new Anthrax album, isn't it? Pus from a festering wound. I thought that was, you know.
Tiramisu. Didn't I shut that down? Old English grannies like fucking tiramisu. Nobody else.
I say, young man, you take that back immediately.
No, I'm just kidding. I know I had a lot of pushback
on that. No, you did have some allies. You did have allies too, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, let's be honest. Jesus Christ.
You need to up your cake game, Randy. What's your fucking cake game? What's your go-to? Oh,
hey, here.
What are you, a black? Are you a basic bitch Black Forest Gatto kind of guy or
what? Okay. Hang on. I got a question for you. And I guess by extension to our listeners. So, Kev, to you, I pose this question.
Mm.
You don't have to get all philosophical. It's one or the other. Pie or cake?
Pie.
Can you ask me?
Pie or cake?
Cake.
What?
Of course it's cake.
No, pie. You're
anybody
no.
who says pie, and I know a few of you bastards, you guys are fucked, okay? Always, always, always cake.
And yet you're the other one having a go at me about tiramisu, which is cake.
Yeah, well.
Yeah,
but see, but that's a different thing. It's always cake. Pie, that's what little grannies bring to.
What is this with this granny thing? Cake, a pie is life, man. Look, dude, I'm from Wigan. We're called the Pie Eaters. That's our nickname in Wigan. It's not to do with those kinds of pies, but I love a pie, Randy. I love a savory pie. I love my mother-in-law's apple pie, which is not a fucking euphemism. Mm. I love dearly. The woman makes the best apple pie in the world, and I will not hear any argument against that. It's delicious. It is consistent. And with not ice cream either. Not this fucking ice cream business with your apple pie. Cream. Real cream. Heavy cream. Heated up for about, you know, preferably coming out of the oven. Microwave about 30 seconds for a slice. Put some cream over it. Nirvana.
Listen, I'm not saying that wouldn't be tasty. But you get yourself a really nice, you know, double chocolate cake. You don't have to. You don't even need to see a microwave. You just eat it.
Just eat it.
You just eat it. We don't got to heat it up. We don't got to put whipped cream on it. Fucking nothing, man.
Okay. Should I put this down now?
No, eat it.
Oh. I've never seen you so
Jimmy
cross.
The feeder. Here comes Jimmy the feeder.
And you know what? There's a guy whose entire job is just fucking making those cakes. And you know what? In a way, you're trying to snuff out this guy's fucking livelihood.
I want him to go bankrupt. I want his kids.
I want him to stand for it.
I want his kids to be hungry, and I don't want them to be able to go to school. Fuck that guy.
Okay, so here, listen. So Randy doesn't do this very often. If I'd like to hear from anybody. Put it on the Twits or in Discord, pie or cake. And you better be on fucking team fucking cake, all right?
Episode 75. Our pal Brian May pulled out his Martin D18 and wrote himself up a real humdinger. Humdinger, is that good or is that bad? Well, you be the judge. Kev and I have already passed our judgment. Now we wait and see what the queenies and in-betweenies think. Something tells me I may be referred to as Mr. Randy again. If I were to title this episode, I'd call it Any Night, Tonight, or possibly Trite and Shite. We genuinely appreciate your support and engagement, so you can find us on Facebook and Blue Sky at Seaside Pod Review,
and on Twitter at Queen Seaside. Also, go to Discord. We got a whole bunch of stuff there. Lots of great talk there. We'll be back with you next week to chat about Queen.
Brand new angle, highly commendable. Seaside Pod Review. Woo-hoo. Seaside Pod Review.
Give us a kiss, Kevy.
Seaside Pod Review.
Ready, Kev? Here. Hey, Kev.
Edit note.
3, 2, fuck me. Kevin, take that out.